Yeah, but he shall first be up with this.
Well, it's a very important one.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now open in session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. The first case on our calendar is 07-558, Sharon Wilburn versus Bank One Corporation et al. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I am Michael S. Miller here on behalf of the plaintiff's appellants. I would like to use 7 minutes, reserving five for Mr. Fossey with the Ohio Attorney General, and then 3 minutes for myself for rebuttal. The issue before this Court is whether a borrower who has fallen behind on his or her mortgage payments and has had a foreclosure action filed against him or her but wants to keep his or her house may be required by the lender to pay the lender's attorney fees that were incurred in filing the foreclosure action in addition to the back and late overdue payments in order to keep their home. It is the plaintiff appellant's position that contractual provisions in residential non-commercial mortgages that require the borrower to pay the lender's attorney fees that were incurred in filing the foreclosure action are void as against public policy, and that it doesn't matter whether the foreclosure action is resolved by actually proceeding to judgment and foreclosing on the mortgage, or if it is resolved by a dismissal because either the borrower has paid it off or has made up the back payments, meaning reinstated the mortgage using the language before the Court today, or has refinanced.
Let me interrupt you to ask, because of one of the amicus briefs that was filed, this is not a case involving the subprime mortgage issue, is it? These were not subprime mortgages.
No, Your Honor.
Okay,
we don't believe that this Court's decision should be based on how much the mortgage was or whether it was a subprime mortgage or a high-risk mortgage. It just doesn't matter, in our view, under the public policy of this state. Ohio law, of course, allows attorney fees to be recovered when there is either a statute that allows the recovery, when a party has acted in bad faith, or where there's a valid contract. Now, Ohio law, however, has long held that contracts of indebtedness may not include attorney fee provisions. As long ago as 1911 in Miller versus Kyle, it was described as the settled law of this state. This Court in Worth, sometime later, then did enforce a contract calling for the payment of attorney fees. That contract, however, that was the very purpose of the contract, to provide for the payment of attorney fees, and this Court made clear that that contract was reached through free and voluntary negotiation and understanding negotiation by the parties as to what they were bargaining over and whether they should include the attorney fee provision. But this Court stressed in Worth that its decision did not affect precedents such as Miller versus Kyle, which invalidates such clauses in contracts of indebtedness.
Mr. Miller.
Yes, Your Honor.
An argument has been made that the provision for attorney fees is reasonable because the party who received the money is in default. And as a condition of reinstating that mortgage or relending the money, it's reasonable to pay attorney fees. Why is that not a reasonable position to take?
Well,
because there's no obligation once a party has breached to reinstate.
Yes, Your Honor. It may be reasonable in the view of the bank to get their money back, and it may seem fair to them. But we think that argument, because it has validity, it proves too much. That argument would apply across the board to any litigation involving any parties, a personal injury case. It's reasonable, it's fair.
We're talking about the provisions of a written contract.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if one of the provisions says, if you breach, the contract ends. But if you want to renegotiate or reinstate or continue with our contract, whether it's a mortgage or any kind of a contract, why wouldn't it be reasonable to say, simply pay me for the legal expenses I've incurred in bringing this matter to a resolution, and I'll continue with our arrangement? That seems reasonable, and it's the bank's argument that that's what should be the law.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think the fallacy of that argument is that there is no renegotiation. There is no new contract. And I think that's been the problem with the lower court's decision and the analysis and discussion of this, is that there seems to be a misunderstanding of what happens when a mortgage is reinstated. When you're in default, all that happens is that the periodic payments are accelerated. The mortgage is not terminated until there's actually a foreclosure. When it's reinstated, it's not that a new mortgage is executed or filed or that a new mortgage is signed. All that happens is that the lender dismisses the foreclosure case and reinstates the periodic payment plan. So it's not a new agreement. When the bank calls the borrower and says, hey, you're in default, but you can reinstate, and the borrower says, okay, that sounds good, and then the bank says, well, we're going to need you to agree to pay the attorney fees, and the borrower says, I don't want to do that, the bank's going to say, you already agreed to do that. So we think, the plaintiffs do, plaintiffs' appellants, that it's probably best to analyze this issue in terms of what is it that the borrower is being asked to pay. The contract says that they can recover, the lender can recover the fees, the attorney fees that were incurred in enforcing the security agreement. Not in reinstating it, in enforcing the security agreement, in filing the foreclosure action. Those are the fees that the borrower is required to pay, the fees that the lender incurred in filing the foreclosure action. And we think that even though in some sense it could be reasonable to allow a lender to do that, public policy in Ohio has reached the opposite conclusion and said that for many reasons we're not going to enforce those types of clauses.
Mr. Miller, are there any other jurisdictions that have taken the position that you're taking today, that the state has said it's against public policy to allow attorney fees when the borrower chooses this option of reinstatement?
Your Honor, I am unaware of any cases from other states addressing a common law. Now, as
it's the same thing with the federal, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so.
So, I mean, at least as far as up till now, no one has taken the position or no one has accepted the position that it's against public policy to require the attorney's fees to be paid according to the contract.
For other states and federal courts, yes. It's our position, of course, that this court and prior precedent has so ruled.
But if we were to accept your position, we would be the first state to so rule.
To apply that concept that public policy precludes attorney fee clauses in residential contracts of indebtedness when they're reinstated, yes, that particular subspecies of the foreclosure case law, yes.
Okay, thank you.
The distinction between the what your position is in the bank seems to be that the law you cite deals with foreclosure going to completion and not being able to assess attorney fees versus the reinstatement, which is not does not seem to be addressed in the cases that you cite. That seems to be the distinction. You argue that that case law should apply whether it's a completed foreclosure or whether it's a reinstatement, and they argue that the case law only applies to completed foreclosure. Am I have that correct?
Yes, that's our position, Your Honor.
Is your position the same with respect to those? I guess there are some plaintiffs in this case who renegotiated or negotiated a new loan, who did not reinstate, but negotiated a new loan represented by the person whose name I won't try to pronounce.
Yes.
What is your position the same there?
Yes.
That's not a reinstatement, obviously.
No. Yes,
but your position is the same.
Yes. And I believe that's what I tried to say at the outset. I think that this analysis will be more productive if instead of focusing on reinstatement versus mortgage versus new agreement versus old agreement, let's look at what they're being asked to pay. They're being asked to pay the fees that were incurred in filing the foreclosure. And it's our position that public policy in Ohio, as expressed in both common law and statutory, precludes it.
Counsel,
go ahead.
But for the foreclosure, would the homeowners have what would the homeowners have done here? Continued not to pay, correct? They were in default on their
yes.
on their mortgages,
assuming
their obligations.
Yeah.
And so they triggered the involvement of the bank to go down the foreclosure avenue.
Yes.
And the bank, it's reasonable, is represented by legal counsel in order to accomplish that, correct?
Yes.
And the additional cost to the bank, are you saying that that should be absorbed by the I guess, the dollars that are coming to the bank as a result of the initial agreement and the added expense to the bank should be absorbed by the bank.
Yes, Your Honor.
To deal with one party's default on a contract.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, just so I'm clear.
Yeah, the same as in any other contract, we believe. And I would point out that if there had been no foreclosure filed, then there would be no right to attorney fees, even if attorney fees were incurred, because the contract only refers to those attorney fees that were incurred in filing the foreclosure action and enforcing the contract of indebtedness.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
Mr. Fossey.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Dan Fossey for the State of Ohio. We believe that for over 160 years, Ohio law has forbidden the shifting of attorney's fees upon the occurrence of foreclosure. The General Assembly recognized and reinforced this rule in Revised Code 1301-21.
I don't think there's a lot of dispute over that point. The dispute seems to be what happens when you have a reinstatement, which is a voluntary action by a party to continue a contract by making the other party whole, not a penalty upon foreclosure like attorney fee shifting has been determined.
Your Honor, we believe...
Why do we apply it to this voluntary act that gives them the privilege of continuing their contract?
The idea that this is a voluntary act is somewhat illusory. Homeowners in this situation are in financial distress. Reinstatement is a lower cost way out than pursuing through foreclosure.
But if there's no requirement to make the bank whole to allow that loan to continue, what prevents a person from going into default, you know, running a couple months, then doing reinstatement, where all they do is pay the interest what they would owe anyway and pay the back payments, and continuing that cycle over and over if there's no other incentive to stay out of default?
2 points on that. First, the attorney's fees are at issue. Costs may still be recoverable.
Those are fairly nominal filing fees, correct?
Filing fees, things like title search, unless that becomes an attorney's fee issue.
Well, why would there be a title search? I don't understand why.
I'm sorry, for the foreclosure action. There would not be a foreclosure action. I'm sorry.
But
additionally, this gives the lenders an incentive to litigate. It's not because they know that if the homeowner seeks reinstatement, they're going to have their foreclosure attorney's fees paid. So
how is it an incentive to litigate? They're already in default. They haven't had their payments. What are they supposed to do? Not do anything? How does that make it an incentive to litigate when they already have a defaulted borrower?
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have suggested, and I think this court has also supported the idea of reaching alternate workout agreements. There are many ways to forbear on a loan or reinstate without penalties. In order to work out the contract rather than...
Well, counsel, does the bank immediately jump to foreclosure, or do they contact the borrower and attempt to, number one, identify the problem, number two, work out a payment schedule or some sort of forbearance if it's a hardship case, et cetera? I can't believe that the first alternative the bank turns to is foreclosure.
Well, and that highlights the problem in Ohio is that I think that could be the first option.
All right, anything could happen. What's the practice?
I think in practice, lenders do try to contact homeowners and wait a couple of months for payments to be late before they institute a foreclosure action. But other states and federal law has schemes set up that have built-in protections along the way. So Ohio doesn't have those built-in protections. For instance, federal law requires that when a lender has a branch office within 200 miles of the homeowner, they have to go in person and talk to the homeowner before they file.
Wasn't that a legislative issue? I mean, we can't do anything about that, nor should we.
It is a legislative issue, but those they highlight the fact that In this case, there aren't those protections, and foreclosure is an option available upon the lender's option.
Well, it's my understanding that banks are really loath to foreclose because they are not in the business of managing real estate. So for you to say that the knee-jerk reaction to a default would be foreclosure, and that is an incentive to the bank because they're going to get their attorney fees, and they'll only get their attorney fees if they renegotiate with the homeowner, it doesn't seem like that's a win-win situation for the bank.
I agree that banks don't want to go to foreclosure. I don't think that's up for debate. They lose a lot of money. They lose a lot of time in foreclosure. But what I'm saying is that if the rule that we believe has been true in Ohio for 160 years is applied and carried out in this case, the lenders will have a disincentive to bring a foreclosure action because it will be in their interest to make every reasonable effort to work out with the homeowner before they bring that foreclosure action.
And you don't think that's the case now?
I don't think that the law provides a disincentive for that right now.
And doesn't it provide an incentive for borrowers then not to pay and keep making up because they don't have any penalty?
That is supposedly the flip side of this, but I can't see in reality homeowners withholding payments outside of some malice that would probably be actionable.
No, they do it because they can't pay. But they know they can reinstate without penalty, so they wait till they can catch up and then pay. How does that help litigation? I don't understand that rationale.
Well, in that case, there wouldn't be litigation. If the bank is working this out with the consumer before they've really reached the end of the road and there's no option left but foreclosure, then we should see less new foreclosure actions. I see that my time is up, so unless there are further questions, I'll
thank
sit
you,
down.
Mr. Fossey.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, James Martin for the appellees. Miller versus Kyle, the controlling precedent that the plaintiffs advance, is a much narrower precedent than plaintiffs have suggested here this morning. Miller on its facts involves a judgment of default and an attempt to collect prevailing party attorney's fees as the consequence of prevailing in a foreclosure proceeding. In this context, the Court held that the recovery of attorney's fees was against public policy for two principal reasons. One is that it implicated the usury laws, and the second was it created an incentive for litigation.
The Miller case has been and still is good law. We're all taught that in first-year property law, that you can't get attorney fees in Ohio. Here, this case got tossed before there's discovery. Am I correct?
It was on the pleadings, yes, Your Honor.
So it's unknown, or perhaps you can represent on behalf of the banks. The attorney fees involved here basically all incurred for foreclosure process, or were any of the attorney fees in any of the cases incurred as part of the reinstatement process? Were there any attorney fees associated with reinstatement, or is the billing all for foreclosure?
The fees are on foreclosure, Your Honor, and in the complaint here, there is no challenge to the reasonableness of those fees. The plaintiffs weren't litigating.
Okay, but there were no attorney fees for reinstatement. It's all for foreclosure.
It's for initiating the foreclosure proceeding. Your Honor,
could you address the 1999 enactment of the legislature where they said we are going to allow attorney fees in commercial loans for foreclosure, any commercial loan, $100,000 or more. Doesn't that by implication mean, as the plaintiffs argue, that the legislature not only was aware of Miller but supports Miller as it applies to residential lending?
Let me come back to Miller for a second, and then my answer to your question is no, there's no help from the legislature for plaintiffs there, but let me put that in context. The contrast between this case and Miller could not be more stark. There is no lender in this case who's trying to sever a relationship with the borrower. There's no lender here who is trying to get their fees for prevailing in a foreclosure. And there's no lender here who is incentivized to litigate, because if we did litigate through foreclosure, Miller would foreclose getting the fees. Now, there also is...
Well, counsel, I think the arguments of the plaintiffs that if you prevail, this is just a green light for banks to make a bunch of real estate lawyers happy by foreclosing every time somebody misses a payment. That's just not a realistic, real-world argument.
Your Honor, in the real world here on these complaints, you'll see that there was anywhere from 4 months to 10 months with each respective plaintiff.
Sure, we understand that.
Before the foreclosures were instituted.
What I'm pressing you on is, in reality, you're collecting attorney fees for a foreclosure process that would be prohibited from collection if you went to completion.
Yes, Miller would bar that. Now, Your
right.
Honor, back to the statute. The statute has simply created an exception to Miller in commercial cases and has indicated that the legislature intends that there should be an exception to Miller in cases involving amounts in excess of $100,000. But as we've emphasized in our briefing, the difference here is true on both counts. This is a residential loan, and Miller doesn't reach that. And second, it's not for the enforcement of a debt at foreclosure, which is what the statute is aimed at. Now, the question for the court is, should this different situation be treated differently and outside of Miller? And as we've suggested in our briefing, and as our amici have suggested, absolutely, the rest of the country treats this situation differently by law or statute for some very fundamental reasons. These provisions benefit the borrowers. They provide rights that don't exist under Ohio law. One is the fact of reinstatement itself. Two is that it avoids acceleration of the debt.
Well, counsel, let me ask you another real-world question on behalf of your clients. If your clients can't collect attorney fees when you agree they could not collect attorney fees in Ohio if foreclosure was completed.
Correct.
But if they cannot collect attorney fees when the borrower comes in and says, "I've found some money, I'm able to pay this, and I'd like to continue this," and the bank says, "Fine," if they can't collect attorney fees in those cases where they put it in their contract that we can, are the banks going to go ahead and say, "Well, shoot, if you're not going to pay the attorney fees, we're just going to go ahead and foreclose and we'll own your house"? Is that the likely scenario?
Your Honor, the likely scenario is here that the banks are going to try to do exactly what they did in every instance in this case, and that is work out the loan defaults. No borrower here is out of his or her home. Each of them got exactly what the reinstatement provision was intended to accomplish. Now, what if we say to the banks, as a court here, that there's a per se ban on the recovery of these costs? Now we're putting the reinstatement provision itself at risk. This valuable contractual right that is given to the borrower, there's no longer an incentive on the part of the lenders to put that in the contract.
That's what I'm asking you.
Your Honor, to take it one step further, and I'm sorry to interrupt, yeah, that would put Ohio borrowers in a less advantageous position.
So
the banks might continue.
You're saying if they can't get the attorney fees for a foreclosure that doesn't go to completion, they're just going to go ahead and foreclose?
No,
your clients are.
They are going to attempt to work out, but the situation may change dramatically. First of all, they won't have to. There'll be no contractual compulsion that the borrower will have to force that. So you're putting that at risk. Second, you'll be forcing the bank to absorb the costs. Now, there's no free lunch here. So what is likely to happen in that situation is all Ohio borrowers are likely to pay higher costs.
Can I direct you to a different issue along the same lines, however? The proposition of law that we accepted concerns the provision that's in the contract
yes.
as being void against public policy. And the contractual provision, as I understand it, is that the borrower may, in default, whose mortgage has been made the subject of a foreclosure action, may only reinstate the mortgage on payment of attorney fees. And we're supposed to figure out whether that's against public policy. But Ms. Wilborn here didn't reinstate.
Right.
She is with a new lender. So how does that proposition affect her?
The proposition affects Ms. Wilborn because her whole process of refinancing started through her ability to reinstate the loan.
See, this parade of horribles that you're telling us that all this cost is going to be thrust on Ohio borrowers sort of pales if the borrowers go to new lenders. Then there's no reinstatement. There's a foreclosure, but they don't ever bring it to fruition. They simply go to another store, make a new mortgage, and then there isn't any reinstatement. So doesn't that sort of moot out your argument?
Well, not entirely, Your Honor. What this court would be doing is putting in a per se ban against a reinstatement provision that includes attorney's fees.
But Wilborn didn't reinstate, is my point.
Wilborn didn't, but she refinanced by virtue of being able to negotiate with her lender pursuant to the reinstatement clause. If that clause wasn't in there, she would have been in a situation where the lender could have accelerated the debt, demanded full payment, and we don't have any assurance that she would have been able to refinance. The other borrowers are also in different positions, but they all also obtained favorable outcomes by modification, forbearance, or reinstatement. If, Your Honor, if we take away the incentive to keep that contractual provision in there, including the attorney's fees clause, and we ban it,
but
now we are in uncertain territory. Ohio is alone in creating this exception, and the consequences are that the costs will have to be shifted somewhere. There will not be a way that the lenders will absorb these costs and continue to make loans to Ohioans on the same terms. More importantly, there is going to be a dramatic effect on Ohio's a mortgage paper in the secondary market. So the fundamental question is, do you want to trade the certainty of a situation that allowed all of these borrowers to keep their homes and reach new agreements for the uncertainty of what that per se ban would impose? And why are we here? We are here only because, according to this court in Nottingdale, a borrower is compelled to pay attorney's fees that are fair, just, and reasonable. Now, when you look at the benefits provided by the reinstatement provision as it currently exists, and when we view that there is no mischief that has been created by that position, and when we also comprehend that the worst thing that can happen to a borrower is to pay costs that are fair, just, and reasonable, it seems to me that from a public policy standpoint, Your Honor, the best thing the court can do is to continue with the provision and allow these workouts to take place.
Should that be a matter of the legislature indicating that fees being allowed in the commercial context are also allowed in the residential context? It's not in there.
In terms of that statute, Your Honor, that the legislature enacted, if this court were to extend it, it would be applying the statute more broadly than its terms, something that Ohio law doesn't do. So, yes, this could be a matter for the legislature, but in the meantime, the common law should continue and the provision should remain in force.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin, this is a matter of first impression in Ohio, and I think I asked the question earlier about other states.
Right.
Other states have not said that it was against public policy, but my question is, were other states presented with this very issue, or are we the first?
There is no other state case of which we're aware that has put a per se ban on this. We are not aware of any case where that issue was litigated to another state. We do know that the federal government and the uniform documents that have been created here and that many state statutes permit what's going on here with the recovery of reasonable attorney's fees. The amicus brief filed by the Bankers Association indicates that these provisions got into these contracts through direct negotiations between consumers and lenders to benefit the borrowers and prevent foreclosures.
Counsel, when someone is behind on their payments, in the cases that we have here, are there provisions that the interest gets bumped up because of the late payment?
Your Honor, not that I'm aware of. The interest due is what's required to be paid. You have to bring the loan current. Okay. And that is what happened
but,
in these
but
instances.
But the interest doesn't bump up to a higher rate.
There is no suggestion of that in the contracts or the record.
All right.
I see I have gone over.
Yes, we need to leave time for Mr. Kulowitz, which you've almost used all. We've used almost all of his time. So thank you, Mr. Martin. Mr. Kulowitz.
Thank you.
You have a little over a minute, a little more than a minute.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the Court has used my time better than I could use my time, so let me just say I especially appreciate the opportunity.
That's a great statement there, Mr. Kulowitz. They'll remember that.
Thank you. I especially appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Miller versus Kyle decision, because that's a decision that my law firm argued and won back in 1911. It has served borrowers and lenders in this state well for 97 years now, but it need not be given more than it's due. The only thing that I want to add to what Mr. Martin very capably has argued already is to urge this Court to take the opportunity in this case to give a strong endorsement to the value of the reinstatement option as presented in the standard residential mortgage as a vehicle for compromise and settlement. If ever there were a time for a court to encourage compromise and settlement of foreclosure litigation and to make sure the borrowers and lenders have the tools for compromise and settlement, this is it. Reinstatement is the cornerstone of the settlement process. It was put in there as a result of a collaboration between consumer advocates, lenders, and the federal government. With that as the basis, as we see in this case, positive results occur in the settlement process. We urge the Court to give a strong endorsement to reinstatement in this and not to undercut the foundation of it. Thank you very much.
I just have
Mr.
a question.
Yes.
In the amicus briefs, they talk about the whole process of coming up with these contracts and the language for reinstatement. Were any of these Freddie Mac loans? Are you aware?
Your Honor, I'd have to look at the record.
Because they limit the attorney fees to $900, and most of these fees were much higher than that, and I didn't know if that was applicable.
The fees range from several hundred to a few thousand dollars in this case. I'm not aware of any allegation in the pleadings, however, Your Honor, that there was a violation of any of the mortgage loan covenants by virtue of the fee charged.
Mr. Kulowitz, let me just follow up a little bit what you said about the public policy benefiting the borrowers. I noticed in the brief that mortgage lenders are in fact required, at least certain mortgages, to insert this reinstatement provision allowing attorney fees. Any loan backed by the Federal Housing Authority, the FHA, the Veterans Affairs, any that's going to be sold to Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac, we're talking about huge numbers here, aren't we?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. It is a part of the what is now virtually standard residential mortgage form used in Ohio and throughout the nation. If the appellants were to have their way in this case, that form no longer could be used as is in Ohio. Ohio would become an exception to the process.
Now, this appears to be a fairly deliberate federal policy to include these reinstatement contracts with attorney fees. And would that bear on what our determination should be as to a public policy on this issue?
Yes, because the reinstatement process is a bilateral process. It stands on two legs. We cannot take for granted that if the court were to accept the invitation to remove one of those foundations, the capacity of the lender to be put back in the position that it occupied before foreclosure, that the future mortgage forms would continue to include the other foundation, i.e. the right to reinstatement. Both of those provisions could become extinct, and that would disserve
what we are trying to do in terms of encouraging compromise and settlement of foreclosure litigation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lewitz. Mr. Miller, you've saved a little more than a minute of your time.
What is the public policy to be gained by shifting the costs that are created by someone who's in default to borrowers who are not in default?
Well, that is how banking works. When they spread loans over large groups of people, they evaluate each person's credit risk and adjust the interest rate accordingly and try to encompass all the costs that they envision being incurred in the process of that contract to be covered by the amount that they already charge. That's why we believe that if you allow them to get attorney fees in addition to the payments that they're receiving, they're actually getting paid twice.
How are they getting paid twice? They had to pay counsel. So they're not keeping the money. They already paid it out to somebody to file
foreclosure. Well, that's not been established as a fact. We believe that some of these law firms...
Think they're overcharging?
Yes, we believe that some of these law firms charge on a per-case basis the lender, and then they can go try to get their attorney fees
that's
in addition.
That's a different issue
right.
than just
yes.
the ability
yes.
to charge. So your policy, you believe public policy should support people who go into default and try to cure being allowed to shift those costs to borrowers who do not.
Yes, and we believe that's already occurring, just like with insurance.
Well, counsel,
that's what happens. You spread the risk.
Counsel, based on Justice Kupp's last observation and question, that these are uniform borrowing documents that are used throughout the country, formulated through the federal government in many instances, and they include the reinstatement coupled with the collection of fees, correct?
Yes.
What more broad statement of public policy
Well,
could
that,
there be?
That is a clear statement of public policy by the federal government, and that public policy does apply to any mortgages that are subject to those federal regulations. These mortgages are allegedly not subject to any of the federal regulations. In the lower courts, the defendants specifically and explicitly disclaimed any reliance upon federal law. We think, in fact, the opposite conclusion to be drawn from the fact that federal law and state law in other states have provisions for this as a quid pro quo. There's no quid pro quo here. The banks get their fees. The borrowers get nothing. Under the statutory schemes and the regulatory schemes, there have to be face-to-face meetings. There are certain time limits, so there are other protections for the borrower granted to the borrower in return for paying the fees, and the fees are limited to fairly small amounts.
You're saying that if you have a government-backed loan, that you can recover attorney fees. If you have an Ohio loan that doesn't have a government-backed involvement, you don't. So we have a split policy in Ohio, even if we accept your proposition.
Well, we have some mortgage contracts that are going to be subject to state law, and some mortgage contracts are going to be subject to federal law. And the federal law is going to be different than Ohio law. We believe that if Ohio law is to be brought in conformance with federal law on reinstatements, it should be through the legislature, as has occurred with the enactment of 130121.
So just so I'm clear, you would have a two-tier system in Ohio as a result of accepting your proposition.
Yes, and there would also be different standards in every state in the United States. Every state has a different scheme than the federal government. Some are subject to the federal regs, some are subject to the state law, and that's the way it is, and that's the way it always has been, and that's the way we believe it should be. With regard to the repeated default and reinstating, we think that's a good thing. If a borrower goes into default and the bank contacts them and can arrange for that default to be made up and the mortgage continue, everybody wins. We think that should happen. If it happens repeatedly, it happens repeatedly. That's fine because everybody's interests are served. The bank keeps the mortgage in force and the payments coming and the borrower keeps his house.
You need to sum up, Mr. Miller.
Thank you. We believe there is an incentive under this case law that we are here before for the lender to go out and file the foreclosure action immediately. That is because if they handle this default internally through their corporate structure, those expenses will be incurred as part of their overhead. They won't be able to pass that on. The only way they can get the amount paid to them that they think they're going to spend trying to reinstate the mortgage is if they turn it over to a law firm right away. The law firm then spends the time filing the foreclosure and working with the borrower, charges those fees. So the bank is able to outsource that expense to the attorneys.
That's a long summation.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much,
Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.